From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Yvonne Crimery. Junior residents have an opportunity to meet candidates for the Thunder Mountain High School principal job tonight. As KTOO's Bridget Dowd reports, the Juneau School District has completed a nationwide search for applicants and narrowed it down to three finalists, who are all from Alaska.
John Arnold, who is the Juneau School District Director of Student Services, Karen Keck, who is a teacher at Kotzebue Middle High School, and Laura Scholes, who is Assistant Principal for Zontakihini Middle School. All three finalists will be in the Thunder Mountain Library from 5 to 6 p.m. on Tuesday.
Parents or members of the community are welcome to come.
That's Juneau School District Chief of Staff, Kristen Bartlett.
There'll be comment cards there so they can provide feedback in writing. And then the following morning, there will be interviews, and those interviews are also open to the public.
During those interviews, the candidates will be questioned by parents, administrators, and teachers. Thunder Mountain is the largest school in the district. There were nearly 600 students enrolled there at last count. The last principal left in the spring of 2021. During the fall semester, the school had an interim principal, but there hasn't been a principal this semester. Angela Noon is an English teacher at Thunder Mountain, and she has a daughter who attends school there.
You know, we've really felt the lack, and I know our administration is doing the best they can, but they're overwhelmed right now.
Noon says teaching and leading the school during the COVID-19 pandemic has not been easy for anyone there. So she's hoping the new principal will be an effective communicator who's able to convey a vision for the school with both staff and families.
And we have to build relationships with our families. You know, the view should be that we are a team to help the students succeed, and I think the principal has to lead that.
Noon says that means being visible to the students and reaching out to the community. She says she also hopes the new principal will have a good understanding of the people the school serves, including its Alaska Native students.
In Alaska, with our history with our Native students, there's some very dark times, and so we want to build those bridges and really help our Native students succeed. It has been one of the things I think our district has struggled with.
Following Wednesday's interviews, the district should have a recommendation for its chosen candidate within a few days. In Juneau, I'm Bridget Dowd.
The state Senate could be voting as soon as next week on legislation that would rewrite the formula setting the amounts for the permanent dividend funds. A key legislative committee considered two bills on Monday that would set PFDs at lower than the $2,500 Governor Mike Dunleavy proposed. His proposal is based on setting dividends at half of the annual amount the legislature draws from the permanent fund. But at least some members of the Senate Finance Committee are concerned it wouldn't be sustainable. Sitka Republican Senator Bert Stedman says it doesn't add up.
There's only so much money, and we don't have a printing press like they do in Washington, D.C.
Instead, the committee considered a proposal that would set the dividend at one quarter of the annual draw, or roughly $1,250. Another bill would set dividends at the level proposed by Dunleavy beginning in the fall of 2024. But under the bill, that would only happen if there were new laws that raised taxes and fees by $700 million. The Senate Finance Committee is aiming to pass one or both bills this week, setting up debate by the entire Senate next week. The governor's proposal would lead the state to spend more than it brings in if it doesn't make other policy changes, according to a nonpartisan analysis. And that gap could grow if inflation drives up state spending or if the capital budget increases to pay for maintenance that hasn't been put off, that has been put off. The Anchorage Republican Senator Natasha Von Imhoff says legislatures shouldn't count on high oil prices. She recently announced that she isn't running for re-election.
Just like you don't build a church for attendance on Christmas and Easter, you don't pass a dividend bill based on $90 in oil. We need to find something that's sustainable and affordable over time.
Some Alaskans who called in to testify against the bill say they support larger dividends. Magnus Sampson in Dillingham was among them.
We've been calling and calling and calling for the past how many years now? Do you guys listen? Or you guys got cotton swabs in your ears?
The rising price of oil has increased state revenue forecasts since Dunleavy made his latest PFD proposal last spring. In other news, in mid-January, heavy snow and rain caused some of Juneau's roofs to collapse. One of the hardest-hit structures was a shared warehouse where Barnacle Foods stored ten thousand jars of kelp pickles, among other items. But as KTOO's Bridget Dowd reports, just over a month later, the company owners say they were able to salvage more than they initially thought.
Stepping inside the main Barnacle Foods warehouse in Lemon Creek, I feel like I'm walking into a kitchen pantry. The smell of the herbs used to make the company's sauces and spices hit me all at once. A plastic curtain divides the commercial kitchen from shelves where pallets of merchandise are stored. On the very top shelf, there are cardboard boxes with the word collapse in thick black marker.
And everything that was not savable obviously didn't look like that, but we were able to dispose of it.
Barnacle Foods co-founder Leah Heifetz walks me out back.
This is where our warehouse used to stand.
The company rents space in an adjacent building where they usually store merchandise, extra production materials like caps and glass, as well as shipping supplies. But in mid-January, an employee was between the two buildings trying to open their outdoor freezers, which had iced over. Heifetz says that's when disaster struck.
He started to hear something happening in this building and, like, felt something happening. It sounded like a big truck was, like, coming around the corner or something. So he was, like, kind of looking over here, like, what's the grumbling?
At the time, Heifetz was upstairs across the way.
And I looked out this window, which is right where my office is, and just saw the whole thing level, basically, in, like, seconds.
No employees were inside the building that collapsed, and no one was injured, which was lucky because another employee had been in the building just a few minutes before it fell.
Our team took off a few days after that. A lot of people were pretty shaken up, and we also just want to give the building some space and our building some space. You know, there was still a lot of rain coming down and still a lot of snow.
The collapse also put a hold on outgoing orders.
We have a fairly vibrant online business and are shipping out pallets of orders every few days. And we thought we lost a lot of product.
At first, they thought everything they'd stored in the building was lost, including a summer's worth of kelp pickles, which are only produced seasonally. But when the salvage crew started picking through the rubble, there was good news.
We were really pleasantly surprised that a lot of the product was completely untouched, and most of the items we were able to dry out and we'll be able to use.
What's left of the warehouse is now covered in plastic. Heifetz says they're just grateful to have understanding customers, a supportive community, and healthy employees.
We feel like extremely lucky, and this could have been a much, much harder hit on our business, and we're doing relatively just fine. Everyone is safe, and the items that we had to get rid of are replaceable.
For now, Barnacle Foods has moved its extra product into another storage space, and the future of the old building is still uncertain. In Juneau, I'm Bridget Dowd.
Volunteers and race officials at the 2022 Iditarod will be tested daily for COVID-19 and must prove they're fully vaccinated. Those rules and others were announced as part of the latest COVID prevention plan for the 1,000-mile sled dog race that starts in early March. Mushers will also have to prove that they are fully vaccinated and will have to test negative for COVID three times before the start of the race, plus another time at the checkpoint in McGrath. About a third of the way into the competition. Here's Race Marshal Mark Nordman.
I don't think you could find a better plan. The biggest thing for us is every single volunteer, every single day, will be tested. The mushers will be tested in multiple places, too.
The COVID prevention plan says race officials, media, and volunteers will wear armbands and ID badges to show that they are part of the, quote, Iditarod bubble at checkpoints along the trail. Those inside the bubble are required to wear face masks when interacting with people outside of the bubble. Mushers should wear masks, too. Some communities along the race trail have taken other measures to prevent COVID from spreading. The community of Tocotna decided not to be a checkpoint this year because it didn't want an influx of outsiders coming in. White Mountains checkpoint will also look different. This year, the checkpoint will be in a heated tent on the river instead of closer to town. Nordman says what mushers don't have to worry about this year are trail conditions. Despite heavy snow in recent days in South Central, Nordman says trail breakers and snow machines are reporting excellent conditions over the last week.
As good as conditions they've seen in years. They were very pleased. Not a lot of bridges to build. Good snow in Roan. We were really light on snow a week ago in Nikolai. They've got over close to 2 feet now. So it looks like we got a great trail all the way to Nome.
The Iditarod starts the first weekend of March. 49 teams are currently signed up to start, including last year's top three finishers. We have a date correction for a story we ran Thursday about the death of a Southeast Alaska man after he was reported as an overdue boater. Stephen Peavy failed to return home to Myers Chuck on Monday, February 14th, and his body was discovered the following day on Tuesday, February 15th. I'm Yvonne Krumrie.